It's 7:33 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown. The Secretary of the Department of Transportation gave his state of the DOT address yesterday to the Senate Committee on Transportation, updating members on funding, construction, and other department issues. Secretary Paul Maddox says federal funding is going to be a major focus for his office in the near future. But as Ashton Mara reports, lawmakers are considering some local fixes to ease the state's burden.
If you're not improving your infrastructure, building new roads, building new bridges, you're not investing in the future.
DOT Secretary Maddox says funding the state's roadways should be a top priority for lawmakers. Right now, Maddox says they're keeping their heads above water, maintaining the state's roads, but he's concerned the paving cycle, the number of years between road service replacements, is getting away from them. Currently, state road funding comes from three sources: the gasoline tax, registration fees, and a tax on newly purchased vehicles. Maddox predicts those revenue sources will remain consistent over the next 5 years, but findings from the Governor's Blue Ribbon Commission on Highways say to maintain and expand upon the current system, the state would need an additional $1.3 billion each year.
One of the things that I would recommend is let's wait and see what the Federal Highway Administration does. Their current legislation expires October 1st of this year. Let's see how they address it over the summer and the fall and see if they give us continuing resolutions or if they address the federal funding issue.
Maddox says then the state can better assess any federal funding gap. But some lawmakers don't want to wait before taking any kind of action, including Transportation Committee Chair Senator Bob Beach. He says state roads are quickly becoming an underfunded liability.
Although those things are remaining flat, inflation's eating into it, as the Secretary alluded to, and we have 30% less buying power than we did 10 years ago.
During the meeting, Senator Bill Cole suggested pushing some of the funding responsibility down to the county and city level, which Maddox says dozens of other states already do.
I think it's a great idea if you give the local government some means to raise revenue, or at least to bring additional revenue to the table so that we could work with them in getting some of the projects they feel are critical for their area to grow.
Beach says legislation to give that local control is being talked about and may be introduced during this session. A home rule bill of sorts. He says the legislation would allow counties to develop a road program and have it approved by the Department of Transportation.
So then it goes back home for public hearings, and then ultimately the county commission will be able to sign off on those new roads or bridges in their communities.
Beach says the legislation could also be expanded, allowing counties and municipalities to help fund water, sewer, and even broadband internet expansion projects. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
The chemical leak has impacted the lives of more than 300,000 West Virginians, and the legislature is not immune. The House of Delegates moved around committee meetings and rescheduled the floor session to the evening. However, as Aaron Payne reports, other functions in the Capitol continued unimpeded.
While the legislature's process has been slowed due to the chemical leak, one office down in the basement of the Capitol continues its function of keeping the public informed, as its director, Drew Ross, explains.
We're essentially called the Office of Public Information, or Legislative Information. We're staffed with two full-time writers, two per diem writers during session, and this year we have two interns. They help us help the members, because the Capitol Press Corps has been getting smaller and smaller every year, and some of the newspapers around the state don't have the resources to send reporters to the Capitol. We go ahead and help send basic information.
The office serves other functions such as housing older legislative archives, taking photos of events, and helping legislators from all parties produce informative releases for their constituents. One of the main functions is keeping the website updated so that information is readily available for those unable to make it to Charleston for the day-to-day activities. Josh Tice, the web and graphic designer for the office, makes sure the website is ready every day so that the public can follow along with the legislative process from the beginning, right along with the legislators.
In recent years, we've added streaming audio. That's one of our most popular links and something that's helped us connect to the public. We have audio for both chambers and for all major committee rooms. Bill status is where we have all of our bills. You know, we get about 2,000 bills introduced every single year, and we have legislation from 1993 through the current year. So we have over two decades worth of bills and corresponding, you know, information and content.
The bill status page allows visitors to track the process of legislation from introduction to committees and finally the vote on the floor. However, the website is not just for political experts. In fact, as Tice explains, one of the most popular pages is a simple breakdown of the legislative process.
One of our most popular pages, if you do a Google search for us, is how a bill becomes law. This is almost the default how a bill becomes law for the entire world. And this is the one people go to learn how a bill becomes law. It's very, very basic. It's only a summary of the brochure that this office publishes. This page gets a lot of hits from all over the country.
While the office has vast resources and a knowledgeable staff, the workers say they are not sure if the public knows they are available. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne at the Capitol.
If anyone has questions about the legislature, the web address for the office is legis.state.wv.us. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:39.
It'll be much colder today with snow mainly in the mountains. That snow could leave an accumulation of an inch or more in the higher elevations, but highs today will remain in the 30s as snow will be light with no accumulations elsewhere. Windy with gusts of up to 25 miles per hour and mostly cloudy skies. Cold tonight with a chance of an evening snow shower. Lows in the teens and 20s. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs in the 20s and 30s. Support provided by Bowles Rice, a local full-service law firm representing businesses and individuals in our region since 1920. Support for NPR comes from Cigna, a global health service company dedicated to helping people improve their health, well-being, and sense of security at Cigna.com.
As the water ban was lifted throughout the Charleston area yesterday, restaurants and bars started to open their doors for the first time since last Thursday. Clark Davis has the story on how businesses have dealt with the forced closures.
Dino Stanley is the owner of Adelphia Sports Bar and Grill in downtown Charleston. He says when he received word last Thursday that he would have to close because of the water ban, he was not happy.
It was pretty catastrophic. I mean, it cut us down about 90%. I afforded the luxury because I'm a restaurant that serves alcohol. We were able to keep the bar open for a little bit and try to offset some of our losses.
Stanley was busy Tuesday as many people filed into his bar and grill on their lunch hour, the first normal day in Charleston in almost a week. Stanley says for each day they were closed, they were losing $6,000 to $8,000 a day. He says they're looking to see if they can get help.
Struggling to try to, you know, recoup those losses. One of the biggest things, of course, was payroll, and the second largest is taxes on top of that. And we're really looking for some federal aid or state stimulus or even deferment for 30 or 60 days to help us offset those taxes to give us a chance to recoup.
John Seville's family owns Taylor Books in Charleston, where they've used the off time to clean the place thoroughly. He says they're looking into whether help is available through their insurance for the sudden closing.
Well, being closed, we have lost a lot of revenue, and we're working with insurance company right now to see what the availability of funds is for business interruption, things like that.
Alisa Bailey is executive director of the Charleston Convention and Visitors Bureau. She says it can be tough for businesses to deal with a sudden closure. She says local hotels dealt with sharp declines in visitors, and restaurants lost thousands of dollars each day they couldn't open.
The Charleston Convention and Visitor Bureau is trying to assess what the negative direct economic impact will be on the frontline employees, loss of wages. We had a lot of hotels that didn't have a lot of people in them, and of course all of our restaurants were closed. So that has a negative impact not only on the facility and the businesses, but also the people that work for them.
Bailey says she and her staff are looking at studies done after the BP spill in the Gulf of Mexico in 2010 and what that has meant to local tourism long term. She says the fear now is what the chemical spill will do to a perception down the road.
We want people to know when this is cleaned up that it's a great place to come and stay. And when people have all these choices, you know, this is a black eye for us here in Charleston. It may take anywhere from a year to 2 years to really get back and convince people that it's a, you know, wonderful place.
Customers did not shy away from restaurants Tuesday. Angela Ramsey was at Pies and Pints on her lunch hour and says she'll heed the advice of State Senator Chris Walters, who suggested earlier this week to tip your waiters a little extra.
Sure, I mean, they need to, it's tough whenever they've been out of work for the past few days, and so I will probably consider tipping higher today.
Bailey says it will take a while before anyone realizes the ultimate economic effect that the closures have had on businesses and the city. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Charleston.
While hundreds of thousands of West Virginians are going on 5 days without water, a school in Wyoming County has not had usable water since September. The flushing process is underway there, too. But as Jessica Lilly reports, without an upgraded system, Herndon Consolidated and those on the Alpoca Waterworks lines will have to wait even longer for usable tap water.
My name is Martina Sizemore. I'm 10. It's awful because, I mean, the water's brown, and nobody wants to wash their hands with brown water.
Caleb Sizemore. It's pretty bad because you can't wash your hands, you can't drink from the fountains, you can't flush without it being coffee brown.
Herndon Consolidated in Wyoming County has been on a boil water advisory since September. A public service district is working to resolve the problem, but it's taking longer than your ordinary system. Understanding the process gets a little complicated. That involves two PSDs, a small company, and a NASCAR driver. But we'll get to that later. Since the advisory was issued, teachers have tried to create a learning environment with as little distractions as possible, like always having bottled water and hand sanitizer in the classroom. Of course, using the kitchen poses unique challenges. Principal Virginia Lusk shows me around.
Cases of water in here stack up, and they're serving on paper plates. And water comes in these gallon jugs, and they bring them 100 at a time.
The fountains are covered, replaced with a water jug and disposable cups.
Our staff here works so hard, and everybody has, you know, just made it go as smooth as they can. And you know, the custodians and the cooks have worked their selves, you know, just as hard as they can to make this work and, you know, to keep the kids' safety and the sanitary conditions for the kids.
Oki Mills has taught at the school for more than 15 years.
I'm surprised that many of the parents and people in the community haven't complained more.
The water facility is owned by a small business called Alpoca Waterworks, but the Logan County Public Service District is working to fix the problem. The company is owned by a local family. Principal Virginia Lusk shares what kind of work is needed.
It was outdated and it needed some maintenance done to it, and the owners were unable to do that. And they needed, you know, certified people to be able to do this.
The flushing process is underway, but Logan PSD says it could still take weeks to completely flush the system. There are no hydrants in the district. So for now, each faucet is running, and toilets are flushed often in an effort to reach potable water. In a message, owner Risa Shrewsbury admitted that the water is bad, but said that it's only been that way for a couple months. Shrewsbury says it's because the company lost the water operator. She says the family is selling Alpoca Waterworks. But William Basden with the Logan County PSD says it's not a simple sale, and parties are trying to work out ownership issues. Basden says Alpoca Waterworks leased the land from coal companies until the property was purchased by NASCAR driver Greg Biffle. Biffle didn't immediately return our request for comment. As for what is discoloring the water and making it brown, it's believed to be caused by old filters and an old system. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly in Alpoca.
Thank you. According to the Secretary of State's website, Apopka Waterworks has been registered as a business since 1955. Jessica Lilly is working to find out more about other water systems in Wyoming and McDowell counties. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback at wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at wvpublicnews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our news director is Beth Voorhees. Our director is Bob Powell. From Morgantown, I'm Beneduccio. Good morning.
Support for legislative coverage provided by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at wvaflcio.org.